and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as we review how Portugal proved lucky again for Tom Lewis. The Englishman held off serious competition to become the first man to win the Portugal Masters more than once.
It was great out there today. The course was in good condition, crowds were good, I played well, I struck it well. I actually got better as the week went on, and I'm pleased just to be here and to be able to put myself in that position and come through means a lot.
Lewis wasn't the only Brit writing his name into the history books at Dom Pedro Victoria. Oliver Fischer also became the first man to shoot a round of 59 in European Tour competition.
It feels great to obviously make history here in Portugal. It's a great tournament. You know, it's a great mark for the European Tour and obviously myself to shoot 59. So, you know, I was chuffed with the day. Going out, obviously trying to make the cut at level par and then, you know, shooting that. It's just a great day all round.
We'll also take a look ahead to the event that's got the golfing world abuzz, the upcoming Ryder Cup at Le Golf National. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm delighted to say that Golfing World producer Jack Hayward is alongside me. Jack, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent stuff. We've got down the line, en route to Paris, somewhere over the channel, probably not, is Paul Eales. Eales-y, how are you?
I'm in great shape, Dan, thanks, and really looking forward to my trip to Paris.
Where are you at the moment? Just tell us that. You're not in a private jet across the channel going to Paris. What are you doing?
No, I wish. I'm in Southport waiting for my cab to whisk me off to Manchester Airport when we've done, and then obviously down to Paris and Le Golf National.
We'll talk Ryder Cup a little bit later on. We've got to talk Portugal Masters first and foremost. Tom Lewis ended his seven-year wait for another European Tour title by winning on Sunday. He won the event 7 years previously, making him the first man ever to win the event twice. Lewis carded a final round 5-under-66 to upset overnight leader Lucas Herbert's bid for his first professional win and held off English compatriot Eddie Pepperell in a dramatic final round. Jack, really pleased for Tom Lewis. Burst onto the scene when he led the Open a few years ago. Looked like he was going to set for multiple tour wins when he first won in Portugal. Unfortunately, his form slipped a little bit, but great to see him back in the winner's enclosure.
Yeah, absolutely. That first win on tour back in 2011 came in just his third start. So, yeah, off the back of that Open Championship, of course, where he got the silver medal and came 30th. Just an amazing burst onto the scene. But I have to say, I see a parallel with Justin Rose, who burst onto the scene at Birkdale in 97 at the Open Championship, finishing tied fourth and that unforgettable hole out at the 18th hole. But then when he came on tour, he missed 21 consecutive starts. His first 21 starts on tour, he missed the cut. So Tom can look to someone like Justin Rose as a great source of inspiration. I'm not saying Tom is necessarily going to hit world number one like Justin Rose did last week, or that he's going to end up as a FedEx Cup champion, but he can certainly look to someone like Justin Rose and his mental attitude, his mental approach to the game, and learn a lot from it.
Ealesley, let's get your reaction to Tom Lewis's win. As Jack was just pointing out, you know, burst onto the scene, then he had the dip. Great to see him back.
Yeah, it really is. But, I mean, he's been coming back into form. I've just been looking at his form just from August. He was tied third on the Challenge Tour, then 29th on the European Tour because his ranking has had him flip-flopping from one tour to the next because it was so low. Then he had a sixth in the European Tour. And then he won the Challenge Tour event, the Bridgestone Challenge a couple of weeks ago, third in Kazakhstan on the Challenge Tour, which is a huge event. And then, of course, wins last week in Portugal. So it's not been a surprise for those watching Tom Lewis that he's come back.
Slippery, how difficult is it to play Challenge and European Tour? Does it put different pressures on you?
It does, really. Obviously, you've got the big names that would be around on a European tour and some more spectators, media are there, whereas you don't get that. It's a little more low-key on Challenge Tour, but the boys on Challenge Tour just go and make as many birdies as they can. Again, if you follow the Challenge Tour, you'll just see the standard is so good and the amount of birdies that the guys made. And that showed up in Tom's rounds 2 and 3, 63, 61 he shot, 18 birdies, no drops. I think he only had one drop shot yesterday coming at the 10th hole. So, you know, that's how they rock on the Challenge Tour. And I'm sure going back there has really got him fired up. And, you know, we'll be seeing plenty of him on the European Tour going forward.
Yeah, we will indeed. And potentially Lucas Herbert as well. Let's just remind you how the final day unfolded. It became an absorbing three-way battle between Lewis Herbert and Eddie Pepperell. Lewis carding that brilliant 61, as Paul was just suggesting, on the Saturday. That at his lowest round on tour. I think, Jack, we were probably on 59 watch then as well, weren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly. It was it's been a mad week for scoring around the world, as you just touched on before we came into the record. Was it the Latin American PGA Tour?
Yes,
you
did. And I've forgotten the name, forgotten the man who did it. But yeah, there's been lots of 59s around. It is catching at the moment. Lewis played with his intention to win from the off on Sunday. He held a long putt on the second to hit top spot. Eddie Pepperell has been brilliant over the course of the summer, going close in the Open-ish, and of course winning in Qatar as well. I get the sense that Eddie probably fancied his chances more than the other two because he's been in the mix over the course of the summer, Jack.
Yeah, completely fair enough. Obviously, that amazing performance at the Open Championship, particularly on that final day where he was famously hungover, and what a performance that was, and what a post-round interview that was as well. But yeah, he's been in fantastic form this season. He's inside the top 10 in the Race to Dubai, I believe, now, which is pretty remarkable for a man who, at the end of 2016, actually in Portugal, opened where he went to that event with a lot of pressure on his shoulders, you know, really playing to keep his card, shot 64 in the first round, but followed that with a 76, missed the cut. And then since then, it's been a remarkable turnaround in fortunes. Obviously, the big win in Qatar earlier this season. So, yeah, absolutely delighted, Freddie. And, yeah, he's a great character, and it's great to see him playing some amazing golf this year.
Yeah, two birdies over the course of the first five holes, put him very much in the mix. Paul, Lucas Herbert bogeyed the second. And on this particular course, if you're bogeying, it's like you're giving two shots back to the field because there were birdies aplenty early on yesterday and indeed throughout the week.
Yeah, but it was a huge performance for Lucas. But again, he's been one of you been tracking him. He's played nice. He was playing on mainly invites this summer. So again, the pressure was heaped upon him to make some money. I think he was about 103rd coming into the week. So he needed a really good performance to try and secure playing privileges and not have to go back to the dreaded tour school. And he looked really good, but unfortunately just couldn't make the birdies down the stretch. And you know, Tom Lewis made an incredible par 5 save after visiting the water on 17. And then, unfortunately, Lucas, going for a big tee shot down 18, put it in the water and double bogey, ends up tied second with Eddie. But, you know, talking about Eddie, 5 top tens in his last 7 starts. So there's a man in form.
Certainly felt like the key hole, didn't it, Jack? 17 for Tom, making that par. And obviously what happened with Lucas, as Paul has just explained there, that was it. I mean, the difference in the end was 3 shots, but it felt a lot closer, didn't it, watching the final few holes?
Oh yeah, definitely. Lucas really stuck in there. He played really, really well. In the final round, you always look for signs of nervousness, signs of tension. And I just think with Tom Lewis, the swing was completely flawless all day, really, apart from that errant drive at 17. He just looked so solid. I think it was on the 7th tee, Mark Rowe on commentary just said he's aiming at that crane. And you saw the pro tracer, it just followed that crane. It looked like it was going to hit the crane. It was such a phenomenal tee shot, such phenomenal control all day. But Lucas, he really stuck in there. But his big opportunities came at 10, where Lewis was struggling to make his par, and then struggling to make a bogey actually at 10, and then at 12, where Lewis was struggling to make par, and Lewis really stuck in there. He had birdie chances at both those holes, missed them just past the edge. So yeah, an unfortunate end to the week for him, but a brilliant week really, and he secured his European Tour membership for next season, which is obviously a huge plus for him.
Yeah, it'll take an awful lot out of the week. There's no doubt about that. Lewis went 45 holes incidentally without a bogey between the last on Thursday and the 10th on Sunday, as you just pointed out. This was the Englishman's second European Tour win, underlining a fantastic run of form. Paul was mentioning this, first and third over the previous fortnight on the Challenge Tour. He moves up to 62nd on the Race to Dubai rankings presented by Rolex with 538,928 points, up from 163rd. The 10th European Tour win for a player from England this season, following a whole host of names. Can Paul and Jack name the other 9, I wonder? How long have we got on the podcast?
Yeah, Paul Waring, I'll throw that one in.
Go on then,
away.
Paul Waring, you got it's one. I'm nice going to mark these off, okay. Jack.
Eddie Pepperell.
Eddie Pepperell. Paul?
Yeah, no.
I'm recusing myself from this quiz, obviously.
Tommy Fleetwood.
Chris Paisley.
That's a great shout.
He's one. That's an excellent one.
South Africa.
Yeah. Tommy Fleetwood's another.
Gone for the Northerners.
Think European Open. Think Bryson DeChambeau.
Richard McAvoy. Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Matt Fitzpatrick in Cron. Have we got them all yet? We're still waiting for the winner. Matt Wallace is the other one.
Yeah.
Multiple wins. One in India, one BMW International Open, and the Made in Denmark. I think we've got them all after that, because obviously Matt was a multiple winner. As regards Tom, his best previous finish on the European Tour in 2018 was sixth at the D+D Real Czech Masters. His victory at the Portugal Masters 7 years ago came in only his third professional start, which Jack mentioned earlier. What next do we think for Tom Lewis? Where's his ceiling? I'll put that one to Paul. What do you think he can do over the next couple of years?
Oh, I mean, the world really is his oyster now that he's got a platform of 12 months to play on the European Tour. Obviously, he's going to be into all the Rolex Series events, which are huge money now. So anything can happen there. He'll be catapulting up the world rankings as we speak. So that's going to open some more doors. So really, it is for him now just to consolidate over the next couple of events in Europe and then just set a plan out for 2019. Where is he going to play? Which courses does he feel good at? But, life-changing could be potentially for him.
Well, I'm pleased to say that Tom Lewis joins us on the line to talk Portugal Masters victory. Tom, long time between drinks, but it felt like it was coming because you've been on very good form on the Challenge Tour. Were you confident heading into Portugal this week?
Yeah, I was really, feeling comfortable about my game. It's a course that suits me. The weather was good. Everything was sort of just sitting there and ready for me to play well. And obviously, day one, I struggled. And I was obviously angry with myself. And to be able to shoot 22 under after being one over day one, I'm really pleased with myself.
Real parallels, Tom, between your win in 2011 in Portugal and this year's, where I think you started with a 70 in 2011, went on to shoot 20 under par, and 72 this year and 22 under par total. What is it about your mentality, I guess, that allows you to bounce back from those kind of slow starts?
Oh, I don't know. For whatever reason, I was level par after about 20 holes. I think I told my caddy, Johnny Bell, last time I won, I was level par through 20, and then I seem to just go on this birdie run around that Friday morning, and putts seem to drop for me this week, and I've been playing well, like I said, and maybe the course just suits me, or the putts are just going to go in. I really don't know.
Given what happened on the Friday with Ollie, were you thinking 59 on the Saturday?
Not really, you know. I just felt like I was making a lot of birdies, and it was a good score, and I got to 6, 7, 8, and then I was like, that's fine. And then probably when I got to 15, I realised that walking to 16, I thought, if I finish birdie, or something like that, then maybe I could. But I thought personally that a good score would be more important than maybe just shooting, the 59. But like I say, 10 under, to be able to go 8 under, 10 under, was brilliant for me. So I'm pleased.
63 in that second round, 61 on the Saturday, and then just a nerveless looking display on the Sunday. It looked like you were in the best control of your career. Did it feel like that on the golf course on Sunday?
I would say weirdly, yeah, I felt very comfortable. I hit the ball very well all day. One bad shot up 17, obviously, off the tee, but even then, I felt like that's okay. You know, like I've made bad swings before, and I've just got to basically make the most of it. And I guess when it's meant to be, putts like on 17, they go in for you. So I'm just pleased that I was able to come through, especially through that last couple of holes.
Was that the key hole, do you think, 17? And then what happened to Lucas on the last? Would you think it was key that you managed to make that par?
You know, things go your way all the time. It can start from as early as any of the holes on the front nine where he makes bogey and I make birdie on two. But I think realistically when it was on 15 where, he hit it in pretty close after a good chip, and obviously I've left myself a very difficult sandy lie on right of 15th there, and I've obviously made a good bump up from about 6 or 7 feet, and he's missed his sort of 6 foot of birdie. I think then all of a sudden, then types of things, the momentum sort of goes my way rather than his. But it was obviously a shame to see him hit it left on 18. But at the end of the day, a win's a win, so I'm pleased.
Obviously a shame for Lucas, but a fantastic week for you. With your European Tour playing status wrapped up again, I wonder what your aim is now. You look at someone like Justin Rose, who's recently touched the top of the world rankings, who just won the FedEx Cup. He burst onto the scene like you did as a youngster at the Open Championship before having a bit of a struggle early on in his career. There's some parallels there for me. I wonder whether you look to someone like him as a big role model for what you can achieve in your career now.
For sure, I don't think there is a limit to the success that I maybe could have. I do a lot of good things. There's a lot of things I can improve. The good things are that, you know, if I was really this week in Portugal, for example, I was nowhere near as maybe my best I've ever been, but I was still able to compete and obviously come away with a win. And that's really something that I've learned over the last years when I've struggled. I think in the past I've only been able to win on my A game. I think this week I probably had a B game, and that felt great because I know that every week's not going to be easy, and I was still able to sort of stick in there. And I think that's a mental thing. And I think if you look at Justin Rose and how mentally strong he is, sometimes you can become that strong when you struggle.
Well, you certainly overcame the opposition in Portugal, Tom. Congratulations on your win. One final question before we let you go. It is the Ryder Cup, of course, this week. How do you see it? Are Europe going to win? Are America too strong? Obviously, you believe in blue. What are your thoughts on the action at Le Golf National?
Obviously, we all obviously want Europe to come through. It's going to be very difficult. The guys are playing so well. With Tiger winning yesterday was brilliant to see. Of course, in France is a demanding golf course. You have to hit it well, and I do believe that it's going to be tough for us, but I really hope that we come through.
Well, we all do that, and we all hope that we see you back in the winner's enclosure a little quicker this time around. Congratulations on your win, and good luck for the rest of the year and indeed the following season. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Great to hear from Tom Lewis, and obviously an awful lot to look forward over the course of the remaining events of 2018 and into 2019. Now, another English golfer who broke records this week was Oliver Fisher, who became the first person to shoot around a 59 in European Tour history. Paul, we've talked about this on the podcast previously. There's been so many opportunities for European Tour players over the past decade and beyond. We wondered if it was going to get done. Finally, now it has.
Yes, it has. And, you know, everybody was delighted that it was Oliver Fisher. He's a very popular man out there on tours, had his tough times. But now that, I believe, is just going to open the floodgates and we'll see more and more. We've mentioned the boys on the Challenge Tour shooting low week in, week out. They're the next crop of guys that are going to be on the European Tour, and they're not going to be frightened. And of course, now Oliver's done it. We heard that, you know, Tom Lewis was, when he was going with his 61, he was looking and thinking 59. So, you know, it's like once that barrier's gone, I think we'll see quite a few more coming forward now.
Let's get a bit of reaction from you, Jack. Did you watch it on the Friday? I was watching the final few holes. I mean, it was incredible to watch. He looked so concentrated, didn't he, by the final few holes?
Yeah, I tried my best to follow it. I was working that day, so it was very, very difficult to do so. But yeah, I was sneaking a few looks here and there because obviously buzz was going around the office that the 59 was on the cards, as it always is, particularly with the European Tour and how elusive it's proved to be. But yeah, it was a fantastic show, particularly down the stretches. I think always in the 59s, it's often the par putts in a way. You look at the birdies, the eagles. I think it was 10 birdies, one eagle, and pars the rest of the way from Ollie that round. And yeah, just fantastic to see those par putts dropping at the end, those nervy ones. I think it was a nervy 3-foot bendy birdie putt he left himself at 17 as well.
That was
just
the one.
And right in the middle of the cup, just absolutely beautiful. And yeah, as Paul just touched on there, he's clearly a very, very popular guy on tour. That video that the European Tour posted on social media this week of all the big names of the game, the likes of Rory, Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, Ian Poulter, all sending their best wishes to him. Tommy Fleetwood on that list as well. So yeah, clearly a very popular guy. And yeah, completely deserving. Fantastic round of golf.
Just goes to show, doesn't it, Paul, that, you know, the whole of the golfing world was watching that afternoon. Portugal Masters, you know, we love the event because it's been part of the European Tour for a long time, and golf in Portugal, massively popular for a lot of our listeners. But, you know, the focus might have been on looking ahead to the Ryder Cup or the Tour Championship in the United States. But for that day, the whole of the golfing world was watching, and there's been great reaction around the globe.
Yeah, and quite right too. I mean, Ollie had actually had a putt on the final green for 58, which nearly went in. It bruised the side of the cup, and then he tapped in for that. But, you know, huge credit as well to experienced caddy on the bag guy, Tilson. He kept him, you know, calm, and he looked relaxed. But some of the quality of Oliver's shots coming down the stretch, particularly the two shots into 18, that course, a Victoria course down there, is a very, very difficult golf course. Those of us that have played it will tell you, to see the scores these guys are shooting, it really is amazing. The quality of the player that's out there, and the gulf between, you know, your average golfer and these players is just getting bigger and bigger, I think.
Let's get a little bit of social media reaction to Ollie's 59. This from Thomas Bjorn. Said, a special moment for such a special guy. Couldn't be more prouder of you. Mark Foster, so pleased for my grumpy understudy, Ollie Fisher. History made, and it couldn't have happened to a better man. Luke Donald, amazing Ollie Fisher. First ever 59 in the European Tour. Top lad too. Well done, Ollie. Well, I'm pleased to say the man of the moment, man of the year in many respects, is joining us here. Portugal Masters 7th position, but on the Friday, round two, a 59, Ollie Fisher, congratulations. How do you feel about being the first man to shoot a 59 on the European Tour? Has it sunk in yet?
Well, firstly, it was pretty unbelievable day. I mean, something going out there on a Friday morning was completely unexpected. You know, seeing at level par, thinking about making the cut, having missed the last year before it, you know, just an absolutely unbelievable experience, you know, and I feel lucky enough to kind of have got over the line and not that little putt, you know, from a foot on the last hole, which I can tell you felt a lot longer than a foot when I was tapping it in, but, you know, just so pleased and so happy to have done it.
We've seen some 59s and rounds in the 50s across the pond on the PGA Tour, Ollie. Why do you think it's taken so long for this to happen on the European Tour, and why do you think it was you, and what was it about you that day and that performance that meant that you finally got that first 59?
That's a good question. If I knew the answer to that, I don't think I'd be doing it more often. But I don't know. I think you need a lot of things to align properly to kind of shoot a score like that. You need a few good breaks. I had a couple of good breaks in the back nine, and you know, just managed to sort of hang on there and make the right putts at the right time when I needed to. It was just you know, when you get on a rolling golf, you kind of, people talk about being in the zone, and you know, I definitely think I was in that on Friday, and you know, it was just you know, you watch guys, Darren Clark shot 360. We've seen, I think it's numbers like 12 60s on the European Tour. And you know, it's difficult when you get to sort of 11, 12 under par to keep going. And, you know, obviously it was a par 71 in Portugal. But, you know, the course is open to a good scoring if you drive the ball well and give yourself chances. And, you know, I'm just still really lucky to have had Guy, my caddy there, who was there a couple of years back when I shot a good round. And, you know, I drew a lot on that going down the stretch, you know. In 2016, I was struggling for my card and had a really tough finish. Done well to finish birdie-birdie, so I knew I could do it. And, you know, just kind of felt like, you know, this is something I should enjoy. Whereas I think you get to that point, a lot of guys get to that point when they're going really well and kind of, you know, cameras are out. You know, Gary Murphy, the on-course commentator, was out there, so maybe it was a little bit of the luck of the Irish. You know, I'm glad Murph was there when it was a radar or something like that, you know. Might have been a little bit of a different story if I had an Aussie watching me. But, you know, it was great. It was great. You know, a lot of friends and family were out last week too, so it was great to share it there.
When was it on for you, do you think? When you birdied 12 or birdied 11, when do you think, do you know what, this is on?
You know, I was 6 on the par through 6. You know, 7's a tough drive, so, you know, I had a great chance on 7 for birdie, but then, you know, went out the front 9 in minus 7. You know, you always look at that back 9 in Portugal. If you can birdie 10 or 11, there's a lot of chances coming around 14, 15, 17. With just a couple of key drives, really. If you get them away, you kind of can still give yourself some chances. So it was lucky in the back 9 that I started birdie, 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 really. Got to 10 under through 12. And obviously from there, I felt like I was sort of well gone to finish it off. And if I didn't do it, I would have been disappointed. So I don't know. I think it's a difficult question to say. When was it in your mind? When was it not? When you get off the flying start like that, 6 under through 6, you know, on a course like the Victoria course at Villamora, it was certainly in the back of my mind quite early in the round after that start, but certainly after the 12th hole.
Obviously, a lot of attention on the eagles and birdies in a round like that, Ollie. But how about the pars? Those clutch pars, and I think it was a lengthy par putt of 15 or 16. Yeah. You'll know which one.
Yeah, it was 16. So, like, you know, I played pretty solid all day, so I didn't really give myself much to do for pars except for on, like, I mean, a couple of nice little parts on 13 and 14, 3 and 4 foot, which were nice to make. And then 16, I was a bit out of position off the tee and left myself a tough par part and managed to hold it. And when that it looked like it was going to miss right all the way and just snuck in the right side, I thought, you know what, let's kind of really enjoy this now and get stuck in and finish it off. And thankfully I did.
What did you do on Friday night?
Friday night.
How late did you stay up? Did you celebrate?
Yeah, well, we went out for dinner with Shane Lowry and his wife, my fiance, my dad, and a few friends. So just had some dinner in the port. You know, looked back at it and just couldn't believe what just happened. Like I said to you earlier, like waking up on Friday morning on a cut line, thinking I've got to shoot 67 or 66 to make the cut here, and ended up breaking 60. It was you know, unimaginable, and you know, just something I was really proud of.
Obviously got a lot of support from around the golfing world, the likes of Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, Henrik Stenson, yeah. Ian Poulter sending you, Justin Rose sending you messages of congratulations. I wonder what that means to you off the back of an achievement like this.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, it's unbelievable to think that I was out on a Friday morning, 8:30 in Portugal, you know, TV cameras come out on the 12th hole, you know, and then all of this media coverage and, like you said, guys tweeting me and, you know, messages from like Rory and Rosie and Poulter and Henrik, you know, Tommy, all them guys. You know, it's just amazing to think that all that's come from that one round. And, you know, it is something I think I'll look back on in a week's time and think, wow, like, you know, that was unbelievable. And, you know, I went and shot 69 on Saturday, which I was pretty proud of the 69, so it was 10 shots worse. But I didn't really know what to expect going out the next day. I felt like people were coming up to me in a restaurant the night before saying, can we get a photo with you? Can we get a photo of you in the morning? You know, you've shot this unbelievable score. So it was a completely different experience, but amazing.
Well, you handle yourself brilliantly on course to get that 59. And indeed in the subsequent, I don't know only how many interviews you've done since then, but you've been propelled across the golfing world. And we're pleased to have you as a European Tour member. Congratulations once again. And we wish you well for the remainder of the season. Thanks for joining us, Ollie.
Hello, thank you. All the best. Cheers.
Well, let's hear from the players back tied second. First up, Lucas Herbert, who was the overnight leader going into the final day. And the Australian said he was naturally disappointed not to have claimed the title.
Kind of feels like all the air's just kind of come out. Obviously, it was looking like it could have been a two-shot swing there on 17. And then Tom goes and holds that putt and obviously just hit a horrible tee shot down the 18th. So, yeah, it's frustrating. But, like, my goal at the start of the week was, you know, to run top 10 and get my card for next year and try and get myself into Turkey. And I think I've probably done that. So I can't be too critical of myself, and you know, I've got to try and take the positives away at the moment, even though, you know, it's not ideal, obviously not winning and carrying a lead into the last round. But you know, I keep putting myself here enough times, surely one of them's got to work out, doesn't it?
You mentioned it earlier on the pod, Jack, gets his tour for next year, and that is crucial for these players, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Events like this might not be the most high-profile on tour, but they hold a really special place. You look at the likes of Matt Wallace last year, took his chance in Portugal in the co-sanctioned Challenge Tour and European Tour event last year, and look what he's gone on to do, winning three times this season. So, yeah, it's a huge incentive weeks like this for, in, you know, maybe slightly weaker fields for players like Lucas to come onto the scene and, you know, make it, have a really, really big week in terms of the whole of their career, really.
Paul, a player, another Australian player that could be destined for multiple tour wins, or indeed just a first tour win in the not-too-distant future?
Yeah, absolutely. No reason why not. He's comfortable playing with the European players. We've seen some good performances. He was third in the Sicilian Open, fifth in the Nordea Masters. So he's been around, obviously coming from Australia. It's a long way from home, but now he can find a base. He can settle down. And he's certainly got the powers and all the tools it'll take to become a winner, if not a multiple winner.
Well, also tied second was England's Eddie Pepperell, who was left frustrated by his final round on Sunday.
I didn't feel like I played great, but I certainly hit some good wedge shots and hit some close short iron range shot. I mean, I hold nothing. It was an easy four under. If you shoot that round on a Thursday or a Friday, you're probably very frustrated. On a Sunday in the position I'm in, you know, it's not a terrible round of golf. But I just wasn't quite good enough.
Got a big week ahead of you at the Ryder Cup, obviously, as a spectator, but what follows after that?
Yeah, so I'm going to go on the Saturday to the Ryder Cup, which I'm looking forward to. Never been to a Ryder Cup before and desperate to see this one especially because my expectations, as I think everyone's is high for it. So, and then Dunhill. So, great end of run, great end of season coming in, you know, lots to look forward to. And, yeah, just enjoying my week at home, I think.
Honest assessment as ever from Eddie Pebrell. Always great to watch him play golf. Great to keep across of his social media activity as well. Always nice to see what his visual is doing generally. He's had a great summer, as we mentioned briefly, Jack, and he's going to the Ryder Cup as a fan. Is he a potential Ryder Cup player in the future?
Yeah, I certainly think he is. Now he's kind of learned to deal with his very analytical mind. You look at the likes of Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, people who maybe have a more simple approach to the game of golf, and you think sometimes that benefits them, and the likes of Pepperell, who are deeper thinkers, might struggle. But he seems to have got the better of his kind of emotions in the last year or two and has turned into a fantastic golfer. The golfer he was always kind of destined to be with his talent. So, yeah, I certainly wouldn't rule out a Ryder Cup debut in 2 years' time.
And it just goes to show, Paul, doesn't it, that now he gets himself into these positions and expects to win, expects to be up there. He doesn't back away, whereas when he had a bit of a dip in form a year or two back, he might have done.
Yeah, it's continual development, isn't it, for these players? But the biggest thing, I believe, is mindset, and that's coming around to Eddie now, that he's been in there a few times. He actually believes he belongs to be there. His game's always been there. It's getting a little sharper now, but, you know, that missing ingredient upstairs between the ears is now becoming part of Eddie's game. And disappointing for me not to see him actually playing at Ryder Cup. I would have loved to have seen him in there, and Matt Wallace, and maybe Matt Fitzpatrick, some of our younger guys, getting a start. But Big Tom's gone for the experience, and we'll all be believing in blue.
Home favourite Ricardo Gouveia, incidentally, finished tied seventh alongside Sergio Garcia and Rafael Jacquelin, with his biggest supporter on his bag, his father, Gouveia Sr. We need the top 10. Paul, you can give us the lowdown from Portugal.
I can. The top 10. Tied seventh, Kim Koivu, Rafael Jacquelin, Ricardo Gouveia, Sergio Garcia and Oliver Fischer. Sixth on his own was Shane Lowry. Fourth tied was Soomin Lee and Marcus Chenault. Tied second, Eddie Pepperell and Lucas Herbert. And our winner of the Portuguese Masters was Tom Lewis.
Predictions from last week. A reminder, it is presenter versus co-presenter. Two picks each. One pick has to be from outside of the top 50 in the final 2017 Race to Dubai standings. Scoring system like this: 20 for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, a minus 5 for a missed cut. Not the best from Robert Lee, who went for Ryan Fox. Tied 27th, so 0 points. The Kiwi managed for Mr. Lee. Meanwhile, Padraig Harrington missed the cut, which was a bit of a surprise given his form recently, minus 5. John Hawksworth was our guest last week. Shane Lowry was 6, so 10 points. David Drysdale missed the cut, minus 5, so 5 points for the co-presenter, who are now on 90 points, the presenter on 130, so a 40-point lead at the moment. This week, we're going to have some different picks because it is, of course, the Ryder Cup, and we're going to go for top-finishing European player and top-finishing American player. So we'll have those selections a little bit later on. In the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, Ingmar Bergman still tops the overall global standings with over 34 million points, while in the Race to Dubai Show mini-league, listener Magnus Dulka is our top of our league table. We need the top 10 in the Race to Dubai standings. Paul, you've got the details for us.
I have. In 10th place is Eddie Pepperell. 9th is Tyrrell Hatton. 8th is Russell Knox. 7th, John Rahm. 6th, Torbjörn Olesen. 5th, Alex Norin. 4th, Rory McIlroy. 3rd is Tommy Fleetwood. 2nd, Patrick Reed. And leading the way, Francesco Molinari.
In other news, we heard this week that Matt Wallace, Paul Dunn and Andrew Beef Johnston are the latest names to be confirmed for the next edition of the European Tour's innovative one-hole shootout, the Hero Challenge, which will be staged in London's iconic Canary Wharf on the 9th of October. This will take place during the week of the British Masters, which Justin Rose will be hosting at the Walton Heath Golf Club. Frenchman Romain Langasque claimed his maiden European Challenge Tour title on home soil by 3 shots at the Hops Open de Provence. Langasque signed for a round of 67, 5 under par, to become the first French Challenge Tour champion of the season. On the Stay Shore Tour, the Farm Foods European Seniors Masters is creeping up on us, and yet another high-profile professional has now been added to the iconic lineup. Jean van der Velde has confirmed he will be teeing it up with the likes of 1991 Masters champion Ian Woosnam and 93 Ryder Cup star Peter Baker on the 4th of October. Well, before we discuss the Ryder Cup, an amazing event over the weekend on the PGA Tour, the Tour Championship, final event on the wraparound season, of course, in America. What a tournament. Tiger Woods, Jack, winning a PGA title for the first time in 5 years with a two-shot success at the season-ending event. It was his 80th PGA Tour title. Incredible scenes around the 18th.
Just phenomenal. Incredible scenes all day. I think we just stepped into the record. I was talking about the first hole as well, where I think John Rahm was playing elsewhere on the course, putting elsewhere on the course, and you could just hear the enormous roars, and you thought, surely that's a Tiger birdie. They cut back, and it was just Tiger walking down the first fairway. It's absolutely ridiculous. And then at 18, like you touch on, it was like an old rock band. It was like the Beatles, it was like the Stones, or, you know, old Open Championships, the likes of Seve, St Andrews, just completely being mobbed by the crowd. It was, just dreamlike scenes, really.
Paul, have you ever seen anything like that in modern golf?
Not really, no. I mean, it's nothing new, is it? You look back at some of the old footage when Mr. Nicklaus and Palmer were going head-to-head way back and the crowds were just following him down the fairways. Not that long ago that actually Ryder Cup crowds were walking with the players down the fairway. So nothing new, but recently not seen anything like it. And the warmth that was out there for Tiger Woods, not just from the galleries and the fans, but from his fellow players, they were all absolutely made up to see Tiger back where we've missed him, really.
A year ago, Paul, could you see this coming?
When you've had a great champion as Tiger Woods has been, you can never say never with them because they are different. They think different. They are different. And of course, he's proved quite a lot of serious thinkers in the game wrong by coming back, but it's been gradual. If you've watched him through the season, you know he's had some good performances, just faltering, but then another good performance, so it's been building up. And what a time for him to come through and win the Tour Championship at the end of the year.
Ranked outside the top, was it 1,000?
Yeah,
a year ago,
about 1,200th place.
Just incredible, isn't it? I mean, as Paul has suggested, it sort of had been coming because he was getting close in big events.
Yeah, of course. That ranking is a bit of a false economy with Tiger. Of course, we know the sort of events that he will get entry into. They offer up huge world ranking points. So as soon as he was back into any level of form and fitness, he was bound to shoot up the rankings. But I don't think anybody saw him knocking on the door of the top 10 again by the end of the year. I think he's 13th now. Just an incredible rise. And the stats this year, I mean, his iron play has just been absolutely glorious. He's first in strokes gained approaching to the green this season, which is pretty, pretty remarkable for a man who's just gone through incredible amount of surgery, incredible amount of stuff in his personal life over the last 10 years. To get back in 2013, to winning those five events, getting back to the top of the world rankings, to then have 3-4 more fallow years and, you know, hugely injury-plagued years, to come back and do this, it's completely remarkable, and I couldn't be more delighted.
Has his game changed at all, Paul?
Yes, I think his technique has changed a little bit. Obviously, he's still got that burning desire after being away. But, you know, I can't help but think that maybe Phil Mickelson and Ernie Els are thinking, why didn't Tiger have an injury when we were racing? He dominated when those two greats were around. And, of course, since Tiger's been away, we've seen the emergence of some of the newer, younger players all winning major championships when Tiger wasn't there. Now, would they have done that? We will never know. But it'll be interesting going forward if Tiger keeps this desire and form going, you know, whether he starts to dominate the majors again like he used to do. Interesting stuff coming forward.
I've touched on the eye play. Also, the putting, the work around the greens is very reminiscent of the old Tiger for me. How many putts do you think, you two, he's made out of 574 from inside 3 feet this season?
500. So how many has he made from inside 3 feet? It must be a high number. So you're leading us into.
Well, how many
has
he missed? Is
all of them.
Question. He's made every single putt from inside 3 feet this season.
You're kidding me.
You know, he's meant to be rusty. He's meant to be scratchy. Absolutely phenomenal. The scrambling, the short game's been back to its heights really this season. Maybe not quite to his absolute heyday, 2000-2001, but we're really not far off that with the iron play and the putting. It's just that it's just the tee game at the moment, isn't it? I think he needs to sharpen up on the accuracy of the tee, but he is looking ominously, ominously good again.
Do you think Ernie Els was sat at home watching and looking at the likes of Rory McIlroy and one or two others, Justin Thomas? And yeah, this is what I had to suffer for years and years and years and years and years. I mean, it was incredible. He was rolling back this. I mean, can he sustain it? How long do you think he can go on for, Jack?
It's very, very difficult to know, particularly with what he's been through, both physically and mentally. But he certainly looks set. I mean, physically, he looks incredible now compared to, you know, we've seen the ball speeds. We've heard those quoted to us all season. He looks powerful, he looks mean. The attitude's there, clearly. He's winning the Tour Championship against a field of the other 29 best players on the PGA Tour this season. It's truly remarkable. I'm not going to say he's definitely going to win a 15th major, but it looks more likely than ever, that's for sure.
We have to mention, Paul, the performances of both Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy. Talk about Rose separately in just a second. A word on Rory. These head-to-head last-day duels are not falling his way, Paul.
Yeah, disappointing for Rory. He did his tee shots in play. He got caught out 4 over par. Not quite what you expected from Rory to put some pressure on Tiger. It didn't happen for him, but that seems to be the way it's been going for Rory this year. It's played some magnificent golf, but you can't win every week.
And what a final hole for Justin Rose, Jack, because he needs eagle to retain number one status in the world and to pick up $10 million. But if he pars, he loses the $10 million or doesn't win the $10 million and obviously loses his number one spot as well. I mean, his brain must have been going all over the place in the last few holes because I think he realised that he wasn't going to win the tournament, but there was this subplot to win the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, slightly reminiscent of last year with the end of the Race to Dubai season where Tommy Fleetwood hadn't quite come up with the goods in the last week but had put in a creditable performance, and Justin was right in the hunt to win that event. But over the last few holes, the pressure, the fatigue of having won 2 weeks kind of running up to that event was really starting to tell on Justin, and he looked more and more in trouble as the holes went by. And I think that was the same case yesterday. But yeah, fantastic show of nerve to take that brave shot into the green, just about carry it on. A nice break, we have to say. But yeah, he deserves it. It's been another fantastic season for Justin. And the first man to win the FedEx Cup without winning any of the playoff events on the way to that, which just speaks to his consistency and his remarkable performances across the season.
So an amazing performance from Tiger Woods, and congratulations to Justin Rose as well. What we need to find out is how that affects the world's top 10. Paul, you've got the details.
I have. In 10th place is Jordan Spieth. 9th is Ricky Fowler. 8th is John Rahm. 7th is Bryson DeChambeau. 6th is Rory McIlroy. 5th, Francesco Molinari. 4th is Justin Thomas. 3rd, Brooks Koepka. 2nd, Justin Rose. And top of the pile, number one in the world, Dustin Johnson.
Well, after months of anticipation and build-up, we are finally on the cusp of the 42nd Ryder Cup held this year at Le Golf National in Paris. Paul, how well do you know the course? What can you tell us about it? How different is it going to play to the course that we see for the French Open that's traditionally played in the early part of the year?
I don't think it'll play too much different from what the European players experience year in, year out there. It's a wonderful golf course. There's a lot of water, lots of irons to use off the tee, fairway woods maybe, but accuracy off the tee is of a premium. You cannot miss the fairways around Le Golf National and hope to get the ball somewhere near the flag. It's a very, very demanding course, and then the last few holes with the water all around and iron greens, it will be a spectacular venue for this Ryder Cup.
Just to back up Paul's point on the premium of accuracy, driving accuracy and greens regulation, in 2017, Tommy Fleetwood, of course, won the Open de France at Le Golf National, and he was third in driving accuracy that week, first in greens and regulation. And then Alex Noren, the winner this year, was fifth in greens and regulation and second in driving accuracy. So, yeah, a real, real premium on hitting the fairways and hitting the greens.
Is it a real leveller in terms of the Europeans? Because I think we've got to hold our hands up and say that the American team has probably got more strength in depth. But the fact that we are playing on European fairways at a venue that a lot of our players will know very well because it's been part of the landscape of the European Tour over the last few years and more than that, does that make us favourites maybe, or does it make it each of two? How do you see it?
I think on paper, the US side looks incredibly strong. 7 of the 8 automatic qualifiers are major champions, and then you've added Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods to that team, and someone who's won 2 events in the FedEx Cup playoffs with Bryson DeChambeau. Tony Finau has had a remarkable season, been one of the most consistent players on the PGA Tour this season, despite not winning. So they looked incredibly strong, and you'd have to say they're favourites in terms of on paper. But I think in practice and in reality, I think I might be showing my hand here for a prediction coming later on, but I really do back Europe's chances in this. I think it is a bit of a level. I don't think it's a huge level of the course, the conditions, because the American golfers are so, so good that they'll be able to adapt just fine, and particularly in the match play environment where they can team up with another player and fall back on another player at times. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and I think the course will be a bit of a leveler and will bring Europe closer to the US.
6,500 seats, as well as standing room for a further 150 fans around the first tee. To put that into context, there were just 2,148 seats at Glen Eagles and 1,668 seats at Hazeltine National in 2016. Obviously, Glen Eagles back in 2014. How much are the fans, Paul, going to be a factor this week, hopefully in Europe's favour?
Yeah, it'll be huge. I think I listened to Justin Rhodes yesterday talking about how the American fans were getting behind Tiger. It's going to be all Europe this time, and the players will respond. There's no question about it. But, you know, like the old adage in football, you know, for the Americans, if it can keep the away fans quiet, or, you know, the home fans quiet, then they've got a chance. It is going to be brilliant. There's more TV screens out on the course for the fans to watch, so they can actually sit down and watch it all on the screen unfold without the need to walk around, because again, there's only four matches in the first four sessions, isn't there? So there's no question this is going to be the best fan experience that's ever been at a Ryder Cup, and just raising the bar. European Tour has raised the bar yet again.
Justin Rose, obviously, and Rory McIlroy were in action right in the heat of the battle yesterday in the Tour Championship. Rory fell away, as we discussed before. Any sort of hangover for those players that didn't maybe play particularly well in America coming straight into the Ryder Cup? Or do you think it's so different, Jack? You know, you come into a team environment, it's not just on you, that really, you know, we can forget that sort of recency bias that sometimes gets into our brain. And this is just, we start again, it's the Ryder Cup, it's Europe versus the USA. You don't have to worry about what's gone on over the course of the last few events.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry too much. And you say Rose and Rory maybe didn't have a good week. I think they did have a good week. They just had a bad final round. They had three excellent rounds, the pair of them, going into the final round in tied second. So, yeah, I think they actually had a pretty good week and be going in very positive. They're both in fantastic form, really. Rory's been showing much better signs lately with the wedges, with the putter. So, yeah, I don't think there'll be too much of a hangover, I have to say.
In terms of the European team, Jack, who are the players that you would pick out and say, look, this guy's got to play well, we're hanging our hat on this guy's got to step up a little bit? Give us your thoughts on two or three of the players that you're looking forward to seeing play and hopeful will pick up some decent amount of points for us.
So comparing back to 2014 at Glen Eagles, the last time Europe were successful in the Ryder Cup and obviously successful on home soil, I think that was the blueprint, and that's the blueprint that Thomas Bjorn's going to follow in terms of his captaincy, the way Paul McGinley led that side. And I think when you compare the team, it looks quite similar to this year. That year you had Rory off the back of two major wins, you had Keimer, who'd won the Players and won the US Open. So we had some big names in good form going in that year. But if you look at the team this year, you've got Justin Rose, who's just won the FedEx Cup, who's won twice on the PGA Tour this season. You've got Rory McIlroy, who won the Arnold Palmer in fantastic fashion, has had, you know, maybe not quite hit the heights for him, but he still had a pretty solid season and has been coming back into form lately. Alex Noren's been fantastic on both sides of the pond. Rahm is kind of the unknown quantity with the firepower and the temper, the anger. And if he can channel that the right way, obviously he's going to be a huge addition to the side. Tommy Fleetwood, I mean, how remarkable has he been over the last 2 years? There's not been many players better than him in the world golf. And Francesco Molinari, we've got the Open champion on our side. So how can you not be confident with a lineup looking like that?
And it's almost as if, Paul, that we haven't got to be too worried about some of our rookies. And previously, we've had one or two inexperienced members. Good players, yes, but players that hadn't performed well on the world stage. But when you consider that Tommy Fleetwood's a rookie, John Rahm's a rookie, Alex Noren's a rookie, who probably should have won on the PGA Tour earlier this season. We know what a good performer he is in France, given the fact that he won the French Open earlier this year. They're seemingly a less weaker spots in our team, Paul.
Yeah, I don't think there's any weak spots in either team, really. But, I mean, when you talk about rookie and rookie for Ryder Cup, it is different. These players will never, ever have experienced anything like it. Even the hardened players that have played many, many Ryder Cups will struggle to get the ball on the tee. It's like no other golfing event around the Ryder Cup. It is so special. And you hear all the players, even the vice captains, telling stories of days gone by and the emotions that they had, the excitement, the adrenaline that just goes through them in a Ryder Cup. So, yeah, it's going to be a new experience for quite a few. But, you know, we've got Tommy Fleetwood, Alex Noren have both won round that golf course. And, of course, we've got the experience there of Sergio Garcia, who had a nice run last week in Portugal. Be a bit of pressure on him being a captain's pick. But I look to Sergio to be the European leading point scorer.
Okay, we'll get some more definitive picks in just a second. Paul, just sticking with you, who are the more obvious pairings, do you think, from a European point of view, or who would you like to see play together over the first couple of days?
Well, I think Rose and Stenson will probably partner up. I would quite like to see Hatton and Poulter. I mean, two firebrands there together. That could be emotionally charged. And of course, and if I was a player in the team, you know, I'd love to play with Rory. So whoever plays with Rory is going to have a great time.
Well, you've given us a pick for Europe. What about an American top player for the visitors this week, Ealsie?
Yeah, Dustin Johnson will be their top scorer. Just an unbelievable player, number one in the world. He actually shifted from conventional putting grip to left below right yesterday in the Tour Champs final and started to hole a few putts. So I think he'll be the main point scorer for the US team.
And finally, I guess you're going for a Europe win.
Yes, I am. Europe will win. It'll be very, very close. And I think it will be the fact that we're playing around a golf course that everybody's so familiar with that will actually see us over the line in the end. But it'll be close.
So time to get some confirmed predictions then. Paul, we need top European, top American, and the winner of the 2018 Ryder Cup. Who are you going for?
I'll go in reverse order. Europe will win. Dustin Johnson will lead the Americans, and Sergio Garcia will be the leading point scorer for Europe.
Jack?
I'm going to go for a European win. I'm going to go for a 15-13 win, get more specific with that.
Okay.
I think from the European perspective, torn between Justin Rose and Tommy Fleetwood, because I think they're both very well suited to that golf course with their incredible greens and regulation stats. So I think they're going to be big point scorers for Europe this week. But if I had to hang my hat on one, I'm going to go for Tommy Fleetwood on debut to be our Thomas Peters, I guess, from 2016.
OK, what about you, saying?
Brooks Koepka for me. He's had a fantastic year, two major championships, hard to look beyond him. He's just so, so solid around any golf course. He looks to be able to adapt to any environment in the world. So, yeah, he's my man.
OK, I am going to go for Rory McIlroy to get the most points for Team Europe. For Team USA, I'm going to pick out Ricky Fowler. And I hate to say it, but I think the Americans might just win this one.
Sport.
Indeed. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Next week, we'll bring you a comprehensive review of the Ryder Cup from Le Golf National and also look ahead to the British Masters. Until then, look out for the official Ryder Cup preview shows dropping on europeantour.com on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday of this week. And once the action is underway in Paris, don't forget to listen to Ryder Cup Radio via rydercup.com or the official app for dedicated coverage of one of the most anticipated events in sport. But for now, from Paul Eales.
Bye.
And Jack Haywood.
Goodbye.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. Enjoy the Ryder Cup.